Hello again, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Wednesday, the 12th of November. And we hope momentarily, we're just having problems with guests being where they're supposed to be today. We're looking for our guest for the next hour. And it's a book that we're talking about, and we're talking with an oceanographer, actually. National Geographic has just published this very large and gorgeous book, Ocean, an Illustrated Atlas. And it looks at all of the ocean, the part of the ocean that's been explored, what we've been able to find out about the bottom of the ocean. And it talks about the status on coral reefs and the decline in populations of many of the fish that are commonly offered in markets and on restaurant menus owing to expanding global markets. There have been decades of overfishing and a loss of habitat by destructive trawling and long lining gear that has depleted the ocean of many of the creatures who used to live there. We'll also be examining, as soon as we can find our guest, global warming and the impact that global warming has had on the state of the oceans. Our guest, as soon as we can find her, I hope she's not leading an expedition somewhere in the ocean, is a fascinating woman, Sylvia Earle. Has led more than 60 expeditions as an oceanographer and an explorer, has authored many publications, lectured all over the world. Formerly the chief scientist of NOAA, she is an explorer in residence at the National Geographic Society and chair of the Deep Ocean Exploration and Research, leader of the Sustainable Seas Expeditions. But we're having a hard time locating Sylvia Earle right now. So I do hope that we'll find her very shortly and talk about the ocean, which covers two-thirds of the surface and holds 97% of the planet's water and 97% of the biosphere. It is understood, of course, now to be the driving force that's underlying climate and weather and planetary chemistry. The ocean generates more than half of the oxygen in the atmosphere. It holds the largest amount of carbon, and it yields water to the atmosphere that returns to the land, as we know, as rain, sleet, and snow. It makes life on this earth possible. Every drop of water consumed, all of humankind, as well as all other living things, is connected to and dependent upon the ocean. So we hope to talk about the ocean momentarily. We just can't find our guest. She's not picking up on her phone. So we hope to find her shortly, because I don't know how you do an open line on the ocean. I don't think we can go that direction. We hope to find her momentarily. One of the things I did learn is that I didn't realize there were mammals that live this long. There's an ice whale, a picture of an ice whale in this beautiful book, that is the longest living mammal on the planet. These animals live to be 200 years old. Isn't that something? 200 years old. And they're huge. The amount of plankton that they eat is just phenomenal. I guess tons of it every single day. It'd be nice to eat tons of food. Not tons of food, but be able to eat that much. Well, okay. That's what we are hoping to talk about momentarily here. We just don't have our guest linked up yet, and we don't know where she is. So let's give it a couple more minutes, and then I'll try to think of what we're going to do. Tomorrow, I wanted to remind you that we're going to be talking about Studs Terkel's life. He lived to be 96 years old and died at the end of October. Calvin Trillin will be with us for part of the hour tomorrow, who is a good friend of Studs Terkel and is a wonderful writer himself. He'll be with us. And we hope to have a couple other people who knew Studs very well. We've had several interviews with him, and most of them were during the I think we interviewed him when he was in his 80s, but he was a prolific writer after he turned 90. So we have several interviews of when he was 93 years old and just recuperating from heart surgery. And so we'll talk with him about some of the remarkable people he has lifted. He calls the et ceteras of history and has lifted to a place of prominence. We'll also be talking with him about hope and some of the marvelous people that he's had a chance to interview, Leonard Bernstein and Mahalia Jackson, Bob Dylan. He interviewed Bob Dylan when he was 22 years old. So we'll be talking with Studs about, and baseball. He was big on baseball, and So we'll be talking about Studd's life and hearing some of his thoughts and hearing from people to pay tribute to him during tomorrow's hour. Abraham Lincoln, a new book on Abraham Lincoln that I find, well, I find almost every book on Abraham Lincoln pretty gripping. But this one is interesting just because of the transition period that our new president is going through. This book looks, and it's a long book, that looks specifically at what happened from November 6th of 1860 to March 4 of 1861, when he went through the transition period, which many historians have said is the most difficult transition period. Of course, it would be with all these states seceding as you're about to take office. It looks at the celebration in Springfield. It looks at Abraham Lincoln taking in the votes from various parts of the country, the number of states in the South where he wasn't even on the ballot, and what happened immediately after he was elected, which portended an extremely difficult early presidency, and he knew it from the day he was elected. He knew it, so that will be what's going on during this hour tomorrow. Oh, dear. We don't have a guest. So I don't want to really use this for an open line on anything. So what should we talk about? Rhonda, what should we talk about? We don't know. Darn it. I wanted to talk about the ocean. It's such a beautiful book, and there's so much to discuss about the ocean and how much more of it we'll be exploring. Well, we'll get to it at some point. I just don't know where our guest is. So what do you think? Should we talk about, here's our phone number, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655, or you can send an email if you'd like, and that's talk@WPR.org for you to join the conversation. I guess we could still, you know, it's only been a week and a day since the election. We could certainly talk about the transition period here because people are talking about that. We had a fascinating hour yesterday with who you would put on a dream team for the administration. We could talk about whether or not you see any similarities. Much has been said. Somebody said, and I brought this up before, that the transition that Barack Obama is facing is almost as monumental as Abraham Lincoln's transition. I think that's going a bit far because Abraham Lincoln was facing people leaving the Union, which was a fairly difficult task for him to manage. So we could talk about your advice. Some of you maybe didn't vote for him, and whether or not you are embracing him as a president, we can do that. And rather than just do an open line, okay, because we don't want to do that this hour. So why don't we do that? What are your thoughts after the election? Let's just go that direction because you're smart and you'll contribute. Thanks. Some of you are calling. You're helping me out. 800-486-8655 is our number. And let's start our calls with Tony from Juneau. Hi, Tony. What do you want to talk about?
I'm sorry. Did you just pose what are my thoughts on the election?
What do you want to talk about?
Oh, I wanted to talk about the ocean, but
I know. All right, talk about the ocean. That's all right.
Well, just for maybe some caller will call in and answer a few of my questions.
Uh-huh.
And I just, because I was going to pose the question, I was wondering what the present biomass of the ocean was versus the land. I was hoping to ask, of course, Sylvia Earle this. I'm sure she'd be able to answer.
Mm-hmm.
Including under the ocean, because I'm very interested in the I'm not even sure what you talk about. Call them all the bacteria and the microorganisms that live under the ocean floor.
Mm-hmm.
And but if anybody could call in about that, a few other things is I was going to ask about the giant or the colossal squid and why they're so elusive, why we can't seem to find these things. It seems like that with all the cameras and possibilities that we could send to the ocean floor, why we don't have them. And I also wanted to mention that I believe the ocean is every bit as important as the tropical rainforest that we hear so much about. I'm really surprised that we don't do more exploration in the ocean, you know, because we've put a man on the moon. It seems to me like it would be quite a lot easier to get down to the pelagic sphere of the ocean, get down there and start studying that. It would be easier than going to the moon again.
Yeah, I was wondering that, too, as I was looking at the book. It was striking to me that only 5% of the ocean has been explored. That's not very much. I don't know why.
Right. That has always amazed me.
Uh-huh. So what? Why are you? Have you always been fascinated by the ocean?
I'm fascinated by many things, thanks
right.
to WPR. You guys usually put the questions in my mind, and then I try to research them. But oceanography has just been a little one.
Right.
But I don't really know all that much about it, but I could talk for an hour about it. You don't want to hear me for an hour.
I don't know, Tony, we might. Well, I hope we find this guest, and you should take a look at the library or whatever at the book, because it is just beautiful, and it explores parts of the ocean that we haven't seen, and I'm not sure if the colossal squid is in there or not, but you would love the book. So,
yes, I will.
All right. Thank you, Tony.
Sure.
Bye. We're doing a whatever. We're just talking this hour, right? Just talking. Tom from Stoddard. Hi.
Hi. I wanted to ask if the book has maps of the seafloor. Back in the 70s, the National Geographic put out several of the maps. Every once in a while they'll have maps included in the issue. And they had one of the Pacific Ocean floor and one of the Atlantic Ocean floor. And I have recently loaned those to a friend, and he lost them in his house within a short period of time. I think his kids snitched them. But I am just beside myself with grief about those loss, because they are not in print. And I'm hoping that this book has good maps of the ocean bottom. It's just fascinating to see all the mountains.
Yes, it does.
Underneath the ocean.
Yes, it does. It has maps of all parts of the ocean and the
Great.
Mountains. And yeah. Okay.
Well, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for the call. Dave from Green Bay. Hi, Dave.
Hi.
Hi.
The topic I wanted to talk about was more in the policy initiatives and transition.
Fine.
And, we're looking at things that the government could do as far as an economic stimulus. And what I would like to see is what I would call a sustainable schools initiative.
Hmm.
Every school is in a crunch with energy prices. And so, you have to choose between having a band program and heating your school.
Right.
And so I think that all the schools in the United States should have to be energy audited, and then we should use the government and state bonding authorities to retrofit those schools so that they, in essence, are energy neutral.
Hmm.
They would, they should be insulated. They should have high emissivity glass. They should have green roofs. They should have heat pumps under the playground. They should have, solar photovoltaic and solar thermal. And that would produce, number one, a lot of construction jobs right away. Secondly, it's an investment in infrastructure and education. And thirdly, it's a stimulus to all those alternative energies to provide a vast market that gives them, in every neighborhood of the country, something concrete to do. And perhaps last and most important, it would provide an environment where all the children in the United States of America would be learning to live in a sustainable way, and to be looking at how one lives and what your footprint is in buildings that are designed to address that. And of course, there's an enormous number of buildings, and maybe some wouldn't be worth doing it if they're on their last legs. But I think that could have a number of constructive impacts in an area where we need to stimulate our economy. And it's a way of spreading the money around, too. It's not just going to go to a few fat cats or a few big corporations. It's something that would be targeted across the whole country in a very comprehensive way.
I think that's a great idea. I wonder how many schools have done that. We should do a show on targeting those schools who have taken those steps, and I'm sure there are many of them. We just don't hear much about them.
Well, it's a local bond issue, and so, the local taxpayers have to, in a wealthier district, something like that could be fashionable as well as affordable.
Sure.
But in the long run, this is going to save an enormous amount of money because, every school system has to pay for the heats and the lights. So what better infrastructure could we make than by having an impact on our kids, in our construction industry, in our alternative energy industry, all in one package?
Yeah.
Another thing which kind of goes, maybe cross-linked between your ocean and your transition, I think that the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration should receive more funding, and maybe that share of NASA, which looks at satellites and the whole Earth-ocean system atmosphere, should be transferred to OSHA, because you know, they have an aging network of satellites and, quite a number of international agreements also, and that has been underfunded under the Bush administration. So I think that should, you know, we should raise the visibility of that and also, make a statement to the rest of the world that this is going to be a high priority for us as well as a collaborative way of collaborating with all the other nations of the world that are affected by the global climate and problems.
Thank you, Dave.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks so much for the call. Let's go to Peter next from Madison. Hi, Peter.
Hi there. How are you?
Fine. How are you?
Great. I'm sorry you can't find your guest.
I am too.
Two quick things about the ocean. Two callers ago was talking about the giant squid and the colossal squid.
Yes.
They are two different species. If you do go online, just do a Google search and put in colossal squid, giant squid species, you'll get a great fact sheet on both of them, if he's interested. And also he mentioned he was wondering why they were so elusive. Recently, my wife and I were talking about this. The Japanese have got great photographs of a live, and I forgot if it was giant or colossal squid, about a year back maybe, which are also you can also see online. And then after that, an Australian fishing vessel, I think it was, actually caught one accidentally by trying to catch smaller squid. The big one grabbed onto the small one, and they hauled it up. And I believe they said it was about 900 pounds.
Woo!
And about maybe 35, 36 feet long.
Oh, my gosh.
They said the calamari would have been the size of tractor trailer tires, kind of. Huh. If they made calamari. But that was a squid thing, just for the other gentleman. But I just wanted to relate, since you're talking about the fascination of the ocean. In 1982, I came back from Japan by ship. It was really a freighter, but they had a room for 12 passengers. It's not luxurious at all, but it's a chance to see the ocean. My dad had been in the Merchant Marine, and we crossed the North Pacific from Japan to Hawaii, and then I flew from Hawaii back to the continental United States. But it took a week, and what the most amazing thing to me was, we didn't get to actually see much wildlife other than plankton breaking on the bow of the ship and seagulls, which I can see in the parking lot here in Madison, but no whales, nothing cool like that. But the most amazing thing was, day after day, you'd be standing on the bridge of this freighter, 900-foot freighter, at about 100 feet above the surface of the water, so you could see pretty far. I think they said it was about 11 miles to the horizon, and you would see nothing. There was not only no ships, but no land, nothing. It was just water. You're surrounded by water 360 degrees day after day after day. And it's so daunting. I mean, the sense you get, and where I was crossing in the North Pacific is not nearly, if you look at the globe from Japan to Hawaii, it's not nearly the widest point. But it took us a week of basically seeing nothing but water. And it's overwhelmingly awesome in the literal sense of the word when you think that people actually do this in tiny little ships. Exploring the world. So it's an amazing, amazing feeling. And if anybody ever wants to get a chance to feel it, you should just really get out there where you can't see the land at all for day after day. It's pretty powerful.
Did you feel comfortable with that?
No, not really. We did hit bad weather one day, and the ship was pitching about 22 degrees. The captain, I guess to assuage our fears, said, oh, you don't have to worry until it's about 45 degrees, because then, of course, the wall and the floor are at the same angle to your feet. And I don't know if he was pulling our legs, but it was pretty scary in that storm to be going 22 degrees either way. And it's hard to sleep because you feel your body rolling in bed. And, of course, the soup in your bowl is swishing back and forth. And
right.
So it's definitely, it's a very, very, it's scary, but it really puts you in touch with how amazingly powerful and how all-encompassing nature really is.
Right. And how would you answer the question? I wanted to ask our guest this, but what's your understanding of why only 5% of the ocean has been explored?
Well, when you said that, I was wondering, I don't know if that was meant two-dimensionally or three-dimensionally, meaning if you have an ocean that's 5 miles deep and you go down 100 feet in it and you're looking left to right 1,000 feet across, if they're looking at it three-dimensionally, that would obviously be a very small portion of it. When we look and talk about exploring land surface, you're obviously talking square miles, not volumetric miles. Meaning, like, if you talk right. about how much of the Brazilian jungle has been explored, there's no depth to deal with.
Right.
So they may be talking in terms of of the three-dimensional volume of the ocean, only 5% has been explored, which would make perfectly good sense, considering the ocean is the Pacific, how many miles across was it? 8,000 miles, 10,000 miles across, plus 5 miles deep in many spots. So I think you end up in a situation with a sheer volume of water, meaning if you actually to put a vessel into every drop of that water would be kind of almost nigh on impossible,
right.
as opposed to a flat surface like a landmass.
Right. Oh, you're a great caller. Thank you so much.
Well, no, thank you. I hope you find your guest.
I don't know if we're going to or not, but I'm amazed how much people
want to tell you about the ocean.
I know they do. I love it.
Have a great day.
Thanks, you too.
Thanks,
thanks Peter. Our number is 800-486-8655. We're just doing answering phone calls, taking your phone calls on, as you can tell, on the ocean, on the transition politically, you know, whatever, rather than suggest shows, just, you know, talk about the shows that you didn't perhaps get into to have a chance to speak about that. But it is kind of fun to talk about the ocean. We can't find our guests. That's what happened here. And I just don't want to do a call in with suggestions. It's a topic that we will get to because the book is just beautiful, Ocean and Illustrated Atlas. Sylvia Earle was to have been our guest, called Her Deepness by the New York Times. And she's explored the ocean and talked about the ocean in so many places, but we can't find her. So we're just welcoming calls. The number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Or you can send an email if you'd like, and that's talk@WPR.org, talk@WPR.org. You know, somebody out there knows about, I'm sure this, I don't know why I picked this out of the book. Maybe it's because I'm getting older and I would like to know how to live to, I don't know, 200 years might be a little too long, but 120? What do you think? About 120 years? 125? If anybody knows about this ice whale that lives to 200 years, I don't know why we don't know very much about this mammal. Or maybe we do and I've just missed the information. How can any mammal live to be 200 years old? Does anybody know the answer to that? I'd love to hear from you. All right, more phone calls in a moment. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Back to phone calls on whatever. 800-486-8655 is the number. Pat from Chicago. Hi.
Yeah, hi. I was looking up the biomass of the ocean. I didn't actually find it, but I did find it is dependent on the amount of dissolved phosphorus.
Huh.
So I think that had something to do with way back, if you remember, the Great Lakes having runoff from phosphorus fertilizer and right. soap, and they stopped putting in the Great Lakes areas
right.
phosphorus and soap. So that must at least contribute to the microbes in the ocean. But actually, I wanted to talk a little bit about, you said questions about policy and things like that are,
sure.
are open to.
Whatever.
Mm-hmm. I have to admit my concern about the coverage of Sarah Palin, and way back when she was first announced, and several your show and others, what is her real biography, her thoughts, all those. And I remember I actually talked to you and one of your guests one day, and I had a couple questions, and everybody, we all kind of agreed that would be covered. And you know what? They never actually got to be covered. So what do we do, you, us, demanding from other news agencies, how do we get, you know, full coverage of somebody who's actually trying to hide their background? And I'm sure, you know, people on the Republican side are wondering because Obama was new and they felt there was insufficient coverage of his background. What can we do, both as a public and you guys in the news media, to foster more in-detailed coverage of those people who are trying to get in and lead and govern us?
Well, I know, Rhonda, we did several shows with reporters from newspapers who had covered Sarah Palin for a long time. It was hard to go any other place because there wasn't a lot of information forthcoming. But we did do that, which I don't think too many other places did.
You did better than many.
Yeah, thanks.
Can I pursue that just a little
sure.
bit more? One of my concerns with Sarah Palin and coverage of the extreme religious right that most of mainstream media seems to want to avoid is much of their advocacy around the details of how they look at what is abortion and birth control. And I am of the opinion, and, you know, correct me if I'm wrong or investigate more, that many of these people seem to believe that the ordinary birth control pill that many people use as their normal family planning methods are because they prevent implantation of a already fertilized egg. are something that they are shooting at to remove. So it's not just going in and having a abortion procedure during a later term, but even preventing people from taking normal birth control pills are part of the, I used to be a Catholic, and that's certainly part of the way they look at it. They look at taking birth control pills that prevent implantation as abortion and a mortal sin. And many of the other right-wing people do it. Should these things be more explored in policymaking as we get to look at candidates and votes? Should these questions be asked specifically of, you know, Sarah Palin, who has declared she's very right, but also all those others who are raising questions about those types of issues?
All right, Pat. Thank you.
Thank you very
much. Thank you for your call. All right, we got three people who want to talk about the ocean. Ron from Milwaukee. Hi, Ron.
Hi there. Yes, to me, the ocean is one of the large elements or issues in global management. And the way it all ties together for me is what can our Congress do? What can our government do to see that, one, there's some oversight in the management of environmental resources worldwide, something to, for instance, to like apply the laws of the United States, which are applied and enforced here for our citizens, on our citizens wherever they are in the world, where they're doing business, where they're doing fishing, where they're doing research, where they're invading countries, whatever they're doing, the laws of the United States should apply to our citizens and be enforced so that we get some kind of management of our activities and of global activities and the global utilization of resources. I'd like to see a whole program on that.
Mm-hmm.
And just to refer back to a previous program today, I'd like to see that Ralph Nader be appointed to a cabinet position called Consumer Affairs and Oversight, in which he would report regularly to the cabinet what's happening with resources and how they're being managed and how the government's doing in terms of fulfilling its obligations to the people and the management of global resources and who's guilty of what. Because I think the biggest problem we have as an electorate is that so much is hidden from us and so much is free for all, not free market, but free for all, and a lot of abuse occurs that we're not even told about because it's classified. I think there needs to be an oversight agency, and I love Ralph Nader's ideas.
Thank you. Thanks for the call. Goodbye.
Do a program on that. Invite Ralph Nader on.
Okay. Thank you. Joe is next from Milwaukee. Hi, Joe.
Hi there.
Hi.
This is in relation to one of the first caller asking about the biomass in the ocean.
Right.
And I just wanted to share this. I had seen this show about studies that they'd done in some of the deepest parts of the ocean where it would be believed at first that there couldn't be any life because it's too cold and there's absolutely no sunlight.
Mm-hmm.
Turns out that sometimes in certain places there are these places where seawater is coming into contact with magma far below the bottom of the ocean, the floor of the ocean, and then sending out these incredible constant jets that are called black smokers, and they you know build these structures that kind of look like very like volcanoes shooting up, but living. there's life all over these things, and they live off the chemicals that shoot out of these black smokers.
Mm-hmm.
The water coming, the temperature of the water coming out of them could melt lead. It's that hot. But what relates to the first caller's question is that they found out that even in that incredibly superheated water, there are microscopic organisms that thrive. And of course, they can't. You know, they could only test so far into one of these things in order to find out if they could harvest, you know, more of these organisms. And however far they could get in to sample it, they found them. So it's the supposition of the people that did this particular show that if those organisms continued down throughout the gigantic network of places where water is kind of meeting magma all throughout the crust of the entire Earth where ocean's covering it, that those organisms and things like them that could live in that area, they are the largest portion of the biomass of the entire Earth, if that actually is in fact true and continues down throughout those networks.
Yeah, which really challenges what we think about what's necessary for life itself, right? Who would think you could have life in those conditions?
Absolutely. I mean, it means that, you know, conditions on Mars and other planets and, you know, where we don't see the conditions we see here, you know, they really could be sustaining life, and we wouldn't know it any more than we knew that those things were thriving down there.
Right. It is amazing, as some earlier caller referenced, that we have gone to the moon, that we have these spaceships going way beyond that, and yet we haven't done very much with the ocean. I really want somebody to answer why we haven't done that. Why? I remember the show. I saw that too. Was it? Or we did an interview on that or something? Because all of this is coming back to me. But why don't we know all of that?
You know, I think it's just it's so vast. It's just a huge portion of our planet, and a great deal of it is extremely deep as well. I mean, it was no mean feat to get this submersible down to check out those black smokers. I mean, it takes, you know, an incredible amount of technology and people power to get these things down there and checking them out. And it's just such a tiny portion that they even saw there. I mean, there's just a lot of it.
There's a lot of it. Thanks so much for the call, Joe.
Sure, thank you.
Uh-huh. Let's go to John from Milwaukee next. Hi, John.
Oh, hello, Kathleen.
Yes, John.
Good morning.
Hi, John.
Hey, I've been sort of a member of Greenpeace in the past, and they quite often solicit, save the whales. And recently I was involved with a group of exchange students from Japan, and out of curiosity I talked to a couple of them, asked them, like, how available is, you know, whale where you live? And the two that I talked to said that they had never seen it. So, I don't know, I was just curious about the price and where it's going. And another comment I have about the oceans is, you were mentioning how they're getting overfished.
Mm-hmm.
And yesterday I was on a bus, and a lady, elderly lady, said, oh, she had like 26 grandchildren. And capitalism is based on growth. And I just wonder, at what point will we say we have to pay attention to our population growth?
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
Anyway.
All right.
Good show. Hope
Thank
you find your guest. Thank you.
I hope so, too. Thanks for the call. Let's pause for just a moment. In return, we can't find our guest, and it's too bad, but we're just talking about whatever you'd like to talk about, really. It's not really show suggestions. We've had people call about the ocean. We've had people call about Ralph Nader's participation in government. We've had people call about transition period for the new president. We had hoped to be speaking this hour with the co-author of Ocean, an Illustrated Atlas, but we cannot find the guest, so we're just talking. I'm Kathleen Dunn. Did I give you the number? 800-486-8655. Or you can send an email at talk@wpr.org. And this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. And we return to your phone calls. Let's go to Randy from Kokana. Hi, Randy.
Well, hi, Kathleen, and I wanted to talk about the election and the media, in particular, conservative talk radio, and I'm kind of a media hound. I listen to a lot of Wisconsin public radio, but I do tune in conservative talk radio as well. And in the run-up to the election, a lot of the conservative talk radios programs, most of them, in fact, were talking about, the mantra seemed to be, who is this Barack Obama? Why don't we know anything about him? What has he done? What is his record? No sooner than does he get elected, and suddenly, in their next breath, they're saying he is an extreme leftist. He's going to tax the heck out of everybody. And they're telling us all kinds of stuff that somehow they found out about him, or so they think. I mean, is this their appeal to, I mean, how stupid do they think we are? Is this their appeal to a low-level listener, or worse yet, a low-level voter in the electorate?
Yeah, you make
my,
it.
comment and my question.
Yeah, you make an interesting point here. I don't listen to conservative talk radio. I probably should at some point, but I just don't. So it's interesting to know what they're doing. It's entertainment, don't you think? Don't you think that people listen to those and it doesn't make all that much difference what it is? Yeah,
people say things. I do listen to it. Because when I do listen to it, a lot of the stuff, of course, I really don't believe. But I think that they help me understand myself better because they try to define who they think I am. And by listening to them, I can say, boy, buddy, you are so way off base. You are, you know, I mean, by them trying to define, I'll tell you, you know, outwardly, I am a liberal. And when they try to define a liberal, they couldn't be more far off base. It's a lot of politics through fear. And I think that's what it is. So, yeah, where's the entertainment value? The entertainment value is in just how crazy some of the stuff that comes out of conservative radio, talk radio is.
Yeah, I think some of it is very mean-spirited, which is probably why I don't like to listen
to
it. Have you ever called in?
To a conservative talk radio show?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yes, I have. And the way that they screen and handle their calls are really, really choreographed. They are, and most talk shows are, whether they're on the left or on the right. But if you waver just, you know, any little bit off of topic, they feel that they've been set up and that they're being attacked, and they always blame it on some initiative by MoveOn.org, which makes me laugh.
Mm-hmm. Well, I would think that the next 4 years, I think for their ratings, it would be more beneficial to have somebody who doesn't agree with them who's in power, right? So you have more material. So.
Well, you know, and another thing, now the big thing they're talking about, they're all afraid that the fairness doctrine is coming back under a different name.
Yeah, somebody was talking to me about that yesterday.
Yeah, and they're worried that they're going to be taken off the air. By all means, they will not be taken off the air. It only, you know, and I remember the days of the fairness doctrine most of the 70s. And all it means is that, I mean, it just opens it up for other viewpoints is all. Instead of, you know, certain commercial radio stations will have a full day of nothing but conservative talk radio. There's a radio station in Florida, Fort Myers, WJON, who has a liberal talk show host, Randy Rhodes, and she's immediately followed by, I think she follows Rush. That's what the deal is. She follows the Rush Limbaugh show. And she actually has higher ratings than Rush Limbaugh. To me, that points out a radio programmer's guts in mixing it up a little bit. And I think the radio station comes out ahead by building a larger audience. Now, a lot of the conservative talk show stations are going to tell you that liberal radio doesn't work. Well, liberal talk radio does work. Most of the corporately owned talk stations are conservatively owned, and they don't want it to work. They don't want to air it. But I think if they were brave in their programming, they would open it up, and I think they would reap the rewards of broader broadcasting and maybe increase their ratings, and in so doing, their advertising revenue.
Mm-hmm. Well, we'll do a show on that. We'll look into this to see what the chances are that we would see a reinstatement of the fairness doctrine and whether or not that's beneficial. That would be good.
Yeah.
Thank you, Randy.
Thank you.
All right. I guess you could say that we're just talking this morning. We can't find our guests. So, Buck from Madison. Hi, Buck.
Oh, and we can do just fine without him, although I'm going to seek his book from the library. I'd like to describe the difference between seas and oceans.
Okay.
A sea is an extension of the continental crust. It's fairly flat land, but it's underwater, and then it slopes, and then it plunges into the actual ocean. And it's different kind of rock. There's Sial and Sima. People can look this up on the web, S-I-A-L and S-I-M-A. So Sial is our crust, which is lighter, and it floats even with mountains, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Silicon and aluminum versus silicon and magnesium. And the Sial is what we have in the seas all over the world. So whenever you see a sea on your atlas, that is probably much lower and probably richer in life. And Sema is the great abyss.
Hmm.
There. How's that?
It's good.
Have I contributed well?
Yes, you have.
Thank you.
And you always do, Buck.
Goodbye.
All right, goodbye. Thanks for the call. Ann is next from La Crosse. Hi, Ann.
Thank you, Kathleen. And just to present perhaps a little darker side or the other side of the conversation, I was listening to the radio this morning, and there's, I guess, the Supreme Court has ruled that there was some controversy about some of these battleships, the bigger ships that have the sonar on board, which in locating, like, submarines, any enemy vessel under the ocean has proven to destroy the hearing, crushing the hearing drum of the whales. They have literally found that whales, in beaching themselves, that's one of the unraveling mysteries of why they're beaching themselves. They have found that their eyes are filled with blood. Their eardrums are literally crushed by the sonar devices, because a whale can hear the click of another whale under the ocean 10 miles away.
Mm.
These sonar devices are so powerful, it's literally having the whales want to jump out of the ocean to escape it. So Jacques Cousteau, who, as you know, years ago had many undersea documentaries, gave us a dire warning about the life under the ocean. And perhaps we need to have and take into consideration a little bit more of that, the naturalness in our Garden of Eden that we're all entitled to, so that no one entity totally destroys it for not only this generation, but any future generations. Maybe people should step on board and speak a little bit more to some of the problems that exist in this unresolved, uncharted territory that we still have on this earth while we're destroying everything that's living in it.
Mm-hmm.
That's my main mission, to just alert the public to the everyday fun that we're having is don't forget some of the tragedy that's going on right under our noses and before it totally leaves us. So if anyone can speak up, and I've gotten involved with Greenpeace, a number of other organizations on the earth, if the public got to investigate a little bit further into what's really going on. A friend of mine works on a nuclear power ship, and another friend worked on just a battleship, and he said the public does not know it, but these ships dump their nuclear waste directly into the ocean. There's no recycling of these spent nuclear fuel rods. So, I mean, that's one of the reasons why the earth and the oceans are becoming this waste, vast wasteland that we've got going. And perhaps the public should be more alerted to that. So whenever anyone speaks of nuclear power plants, I automatically draw arms, because that happens on land. What now is occurring in the ocean? So I hate to break anybody's great day, but these things do exist. And if we let it get to a point where it's a point of no return, we will regret it as a human.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Ann, so much for your call. Claire is next from Madison. Hi, Claire.
Hi. I wanted to speak about an editorial I saw in the New York Times yesterday about the food protein pyramid in the ocean, and how we are about a third of the weight of the fish that are caught each year are used for feed for other animals and for fish farms. And then this is, it has a ratio. You use 3 pounds of this feed fish to create 1 pound of fish to eat.
Mm.
And this is really totally unsustainable. And
sure.
So somehow things have to change, and the sea has to, we have to control what's happening in the oceans also. And we have to have some sort of control and oversight over what's being done. just thought I'd bring it up.
Thank you. Thanks very much for the call.
Thank you.
Yeah, and we did finally, just a couple minutes ago, make contact with a guest. It's not appropriate to have her on. Would we all just be saying, oh, no, that wasn't long enough? She had a power outage, so she would like to reschedule, so we will reschedule this show. Whatever this show has been, we will talk about the ocean with the co-author of the book, The Ocean, an Illustrated Atlas, probably sometime next week. I'm sorry, everybody. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. And we've wound up this hour just talking about, I don't know what we're talking about. We're talking about the ocean because some of you have had some very interesting things to say about that. We're also looking at conversations that maybe you didn't have a chance to get on the air because the lines were so busy. We've talked an awful lot of politics for years now. So we've talked about that and giving you a chance to make comments on issues this hour of the program. And welcoming your calls at 800-486-8655. Or you can send an email if you'd like, and that's talk@wpr.org. Tomorrow during this time period, we'll be talking about Abraham Lincoln and the months that he went through, and those were some months from his election in 1860 to his inauguration, which was a longer period of time. They were inaugurated on March 4th, and all that happened, it traces a little bit about his non-campaigning. He really didn't campaign for the presidency, and looks at what happened on election night as he took in the results in Springfield, Illinois, what was happening on the street with supporters of his, and what was happening in the South with people who were getting ready to secede from the Union. So it was quite a time in American history, and the whole book is devoted to those months. We'll be talking with the author. First hour of our program tomorrow, it's a tribute to Studs Terkel. We'll play some of the interviews we were fortunate enough to have with him over the last few years and hear from Calvin Trillin, the wonderful writer who knew and was a friend of Studs. And we'll also welcome your phone calls of memories. I know he had a special place in many of your hearts. So we'll talk about his long life. And that will be the first hour of our program tomorrow. Okay, let's go to George from Milwaukee next. Hi, George.
Hello, Kathleen.
Hi, George.
I read an obituary several weeks ago, and listening to the ocean tales today, it reminded me of that. One of the gentlemen that went down in the bathscape or bathsphere in the early 60s, and that record still stands. They went down into the Marianas Trench. It's near 7 miles deep.
Oh, my.
It's a fascinating story, and I'm wondering why, since they went down in the 60s, it'd be interesting to find out why they have not gone up to that depth since. And I know they still go down deep, but why not to that depth? And being a recreational diver, also an old anecdote is I've gone down 100 feet, and that's fascinating to me. But can you imagine?
No, I can't.
Being down seven miles, and I'd love to hear more about the first time those creatures, the strange creatures, the first time they saw those, and that'd be great to hear about.
I thought somebody had gone down that far since the 60s. Am I wrong?
Well, they're going down. I know they go down, and we've all seen the things on, I think, PBS. They go down in Alvin.
Yes.
But I don't know that, and maybe I'm wrong. I don't think they go down to that those kinds of depths.
Hmm.
Maybe I'm wrong.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be neat to hear some more about that.
I'd love to be able to do it. I think I'm claustrophobic enough that I couldn't possibly do that, but it would be in it. It would be something, wouldn't it?
Yeah,
a whole new world. Here's
world. I think you'd have to put out. It would be like going to outer space. I'm sure.
Couldn't do that either.
And
could you?
You'd have to put out of your mind that you're in that position and that with 7 miles of water above you. You know, my God.
You just are where you are, right?
Right.
Yeah. Right.
Right.
Thank you, George.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks so much for the call.
Right.
That's probably all the time that we're going to have. Thank you, everybody. I didn't know what the heck we were going to do this hour, and we just couldn't find the guest. So she will be booked for another time. Once again, if you just wondered what happened to her. She had a power outage and would like to reschedule. And I was looking forward to speaking with her. She has been called America's hero for the planet, has led expeditions, more than 60, as an oceanographer and explorer. And we just couldn't reach her today because of the power situation at wherever she is. So we will reschedule a conversation on the ocean, an illustrated atlas produced with grant support from NASA and featuring really state-of-the-art seafloor maps. So if you want to look at this before we talk about it, I can tell you just from your phone calls that there's a deep amount of interest in this topic and lots of questions. So the next time we talk about it, we'll have the guest and we'll have a good show. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for answering all of the phone calls this hour, and thanks for all of your calls, everybody. We're going to have news coming up in just a moment from National Public Radio, and then many hours of great conversation ahead. So please stay with us, and we'll be with you again tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock from 9 to 11. Good shows tomorrow. I hope you'll listen. I'm Kathleen Dunn. It's a minute before 11, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.